What's up, everyone? Welcome to the first ATL All Day podcast / YouTube video. If you guys are watching the video, we might put that up later. I'm not sure. We'll have to figure out how dumb we look before, maybe.
Exactly.
I'm here with Brad Roland, co-editor of the site, and I am Carlos Collazo. This is the first time we've done this, so bear with us. But today I think we're going to talk some Braves baseball, and we might get into the Hawks head coach search. Anything you want to start out with, Brad?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a big week for the Braves, actually. I mean, I guess that's eight straight now. Yeah. After tonight's two wins, we stole two tonight much earlier in the night, but haven't lost in a week, which is always nice.
It is good. Currently, I'm checking the standings, and the Braves are 30-18 and 5.5 games up on the Washington Nationals, which is fantastic to see. Also, it's nice to see that 8-2 the past 10 games for us, and the Nationals are 4-6. They've been struggling this year, and I'm actually kind of surprised. I thought they'd come out of the gates hot, but I don't know. It seems like every year all the analysts pick a team that they think are going to just go all the way, and that team just struggles. I think the same can be said with the Angels. They kind of struggled at first, but I'm pretty sure they'll get on it sometime soon, and it'll be a pretty good race this year.
Yeah, I'll own up to the fact that I picked Washington to, I think, win either 99 or 100 in my preseason.
I need to do those. I've actually never done a preseason prediction for all the teams. I don't know why.
It's an interesting process, especially actually, balancing it all out, because you got to actually make it add up.
Yeah.
It's weird. I started off like 30 games off from what would be even for everybody, so I had to get some
I think I would just take the easy way out and just pick first, second, third, fourth, fifth. No wins or losses.
That's definitely easier.
But actually, did you watch the game tonight?
I did. Saw the end of the first game tonight and the full game tonight.
Were you there, or were you?
No, I mean it's today? I've been there a lot recently.
Yeah.
Of
you before Brad goes on about this, you need to harass him on Twitter, because he goes to basically all the Braves games, and I'm just sitting here in North Carolina being jealous. So there's that.
It happens.
So actually, I wanted to talk about Mike Minor first, if you don't mind, because Minor has been absolutely incredible this year. I know a couple people were talking about him having a breakout year in 2013. One of the most notable guys is Ben Deronio.
Gonna say that's Ben's guy.
Capital Avenue Club. If you guys don't know who that is, and you like the Braves, then you probably don't have Twitter, and or the internet. But Ben's a smart dude, and he predicted Mike Minor to have a breakout year. And like most of the things Ben says, he was right about it. Currently, Minor has a 2.47 ERA, and he is 6-2. But what's really impressive, at least what I think is really impressive with him, is his control. He's only walking just under two batters per nine innings, which is a career best for him. And that's just really good to see that control.
I guess I think it was DOB or somebody from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution today had it. I think he's got a 2.32 ERA in his last 25 starts, which is, you know, Cy Young level, like absolute staff ace level production. And he struck out 10 and 7 and a third tonight. So, I mean, right now he's got over a 4-1 strikeout to walk. So
that's incredible.
Pretty much lighting it up, and everybody kind of thought he might take a small step back after second half of last year, but he's been just as good, if not better.
Yeah, it seems like he's pretty much stepped into Chris Medlin's spot after he was absolutely dominant last year. Medlin's been solid this year. A lot of people are giving him some criticism, but I think that's just because they kind of expect him to continue throwing what he was doing last year, which was just ridiculous. But it's really nice to see Minor excelling on the mound, and hopefully that'll continue.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Medlin either. I mean, Medlin's the only kind of worrisome thing about Medlin's been his control. I mean, he's walking, I think, over 3/9, which is not bad in like regular life, but when he's walking 1/9 for half a season, it's kind of alarming. I mean, he's still got a 3.16 ERA.
Yep. Yeah, he's walking 3.3 batters per nine, and he's got 3.16 ERA. But I don't think that's too big of a deal, because that's higher than he's ever had. Well, no, in 2009 he had a mark higher, but for his career he's walked 2.3 per nine. So I don't think we should be too worried about it, just because of his track record, and that's kind of how he's had his success in the past, relying on that great control. But if it continues, we might have to see if something's wrong with him. Maybe he's injured. Maybe he's tinkering with some pitches. Maybe he's lost command of some. But yeah, like you said, he's been solid, so we shouldn't really worry about him.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty small sample. I mean, it's 60 innings, so I guess that's not that small of a sample. But he's still been solid enough where I wouldn't worry about Medlin.
Yeah, he's been good. The 1-5 record will get all the old school people. But
oh, yeah, win loss.
We were talking about that earlier. Yeah, you guys win-loss. Do not need to rely on win loss records, because those are stupid. So just ignore them. It doesn't matter.
Just look up Cliff Lee's numbers from last year.
Exactly.
That's all you need to look at is Cliff Lee's numbers from last year.
Beautiful. But speaking of people we do need to worry about, how about the boss man and Dan Uggla? What do you think about BJ Upton and Dan Uggla so far this year, Brad?
I'm actually not worried about Uggla. First, I guess I'll start with Uggla. I'm really not worried about Uggla. If you told me Uggla was going to hit 30 home runs and hit 210, I'd honestly be fine with it. Like, I mean, it's not what you want from a guy who you're paying $13 million.
Something like that.
I think that's right. I mean, he really hasn't been an abject disaster. I mean, he's kind of been an abject disaster, but when you're an abject disaster and your on base is still 291 and you have 8 homers, it's not like, I mean, he's on pace for close to 30 homers still.
Yeah.
And if it gives you power, you can kind of live with the terrible bad. I mean, he probably won't hit 180 all year. I mean, he might, but
we can hope that he won't do that. Yeah, I'm with you though. He's definitely not going to hit like he was with the Marlins, which really kind of sucks, but with Uggla, it was definitely a risk signing him to that extension. I think the trade, if we look back, the trade for Dan Uggla was a great trade. It was, utility guy, what's his name?
Omar Infante.
Infante and
Mike
Boone.
Dunn.
Mike Dunn, yeah. So you got a left-handed reliever who's not, he wasn't that great. I think he had a couple good games for us, but he really was scrap. We had tons of pitchers. And then you got Omar Infante, who has been pretty much terrible since we've traded him. he had a couple good years as like a super utility guy, and then you get Dan Uggla, who the year we traded for him, he had a .287 average, .369 on base percentage, and a .508 slugging percentage with the Marlins, and he's hitting over 30 home runs for like the past 5 years. And then with the Braves, the average just pretty much evaporates. The on base percentage goes down with that, but he always took his walks. He's got a career base on ball percentage of base on ball percentage. He's got a career walk rate of like 11.2%, which is solid. And I mean, yeah, it kind of sucks that we're paying him that much money, and he has a terrible average, and he also isn't any use in the field.
Oh no!
But yeah. But like you said, he's got the power, and our lineup is good enough to kind of cover him up, I guess you could say. We don't really need him to be the all-star that he was with the Marlins.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably safe. I mean, last year, even with his horrible .220 batting average, he still on base was .348 because he walks like crazy.
Yeah, that was impressive.
And I still think he'll end the season with as like a 2-3 win player. So if he gives you, 28, 30 homers and an on base of, 320, 310, 320, it's not good, but it's not the disaster that everybody wants to think it is.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to be hitting near the bottom of the lineup, hopefully. I think the worst part about him is just watching him ruin so many of Simmons' double plays.
Oh.
I mean, the kid has so many gorgeous double plays coming up, and Ugla just botches them, but that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, I could talk about Simmons' defense all day long.
We might have to dedicate a podcast for that.
Yeah, but, I mean, Ugla's pretty bad at second defensively, but if he just makes the routine stuff, that's really all we need. If you have Simmons on the other side, it helps a lot, makes up for a lot of sins. I guess at third and second, because the third base duo is not particularly good either on defense.
It's not that great. Chris Johnson's had some rough plays, and I think
he's bad.
People talked about Juan Francisco like he was average or a little above average, but I think he's just average at best. I don't think he's anything special.
Yeah, he's got a big arm, but no range at all. And
decent arm.
Yeah.
Gloves okay, but we got Simmons, so.
We do.
Okay, how about B.J. Upton? He has arguably been one of the most disappointing players in the majors. I think Ike Davis probably has the top spot, but B.J. is currently hitting, let's see, after today, 155, 246, 264 is his triple slash with 4 home runs currently, and his strikeout percentage is 32.7 right now. What are your thoughts on B.J., Brad?
I think I'm like the last person still defending B.J. Upton.
I know. We had someone commented on the Facebook page. They
yeah,
said,
I was going to mention that.
Yeah, last week I wrote an article on B.J. Upton just kind of going over what he's done so far and what we should expect out of him and what that means for the team. And I was pretty negative on him. I waited a while to write that piece because I still think he can come back around. But as of right now, we're paying him $75 million to hit, like, I don't know, Jeff Kepinger. Who's a good comparison right now?
Yeah, Jeff Kepinger right now is. Yeah, I think his OPS is what, 508.
Oh, it's terrible. But anyways, why do you think we still have hope for BJ? Because I think we do. But I want to hear your reasons for holding on to hope for BJ.
Well, I mean, yeah, the Facebook commenter, it's more of a. He's actually somebody that I actually know in real life, which just makes it funnier. My thing with Upton is that he's not gonna hit for batting average. So people assuming that he's gonna hit for batting average just need to forget that he's gonna hit like forget that altogether. His value is defense, power, and speed, and it doesn't matter what he hits. I mean, obviously it matters if he hits 155, but if he hits 230 with power and speed, he's a very valuable player. But his strikeout rate, like as you mentioned, 32.7% is pretty. It's kind of. I mean, he's always going to be a high strikeout guy, but that's an outlier. I mean, that's unsustainably bad.
Yeah.
So if that's an indicator of future, then he's going to have a hard time. But he's still walking. I mean, he's almost 10% walk rate on the year, and the power is not gone. I mean, 4 homers is below his career rate, but that's even if you just took the 4, it's still a 15-homer pace, and that's not a disaster at center field when you have a Gold Glove level defense in center.
Yeah, I agree. I think I mentioned a comparison to him was Adam Dunn, which I don't know how close this is or how much you can justify this, but he's switching leagues. He's got a huge contract that he's trying to live up to, so there could be a number of things going on inside his head. He's getting used to new pitching. He's maybe I've never had a $75 million contract, so I can't tell you if this is true or not, but he might be putting more pressure on himself, which should be fairly common in Major League Baseball. I think you can find a good number of examples where players underperform after they get their big contract. So I still have faith. I still think he'll come around. I know the AGC has had a bunch of stuff out about Greg Walker talking about how much work BJ's putting in the batting cage. And obviously you hear that from everyone. But I really do think that he'll come around. he's not going to hit under 200 the whole year, the rest of the way.
Yeah, I mean, you got to – he's 28. And, I mean, I can't imagine that he's – that his skills have depleted so much to where he can't be productive at 28. And, I mean, he's – and he can still run, which is half his value anyway. So,
yep.
I mean, the guy who hit 300 with 24 homers is probably not coming back. That was probably an outlier, but I mean, he's got a backup of 211 right now, which is 100 points below his career.
Yeah.
So there's some luck in there, and it's still early. I mean, 168 plate appearances is not enough. I mean, if we get to the end of July and he's hitting 150, then get the pitchforks ready. But it's until then.
Also,
it's fine.
You were talking about the BABIP being really low. His infield fly ball percentage is also ridiculously high. It's 31.6% compared to 9%. So
that's an issue. I mean, that's one where the detractors would probably grab on that and say,
"Yeah, well, his swings
this is a bad everything. Sign." Yeah.
The same thing kind of happened. Who was it a couple years ago? Was it Hayward?
Hayward.
His infield fly ball percentage was really high.
Yep.
And I'm not trying to say that he's injured or anything, because I'm pretty sure Hayward was injured during that time. But that's just a number that's not going to stay that high the whole year, and that'll improve the numbers for BJ. But the real difference for me in Ugla and BJ, as far as we have faith for BJ doing better, in Ugla maybe he could just pedal around what he's doing now, is their age, and they're different players. Like you said, BJ relies on his speed and his defense. Ugla was pretty much just a home run hitter, and that's still what he is.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think they're kind of both who they are. I mean, Ugla, you can see the drop off because of his age, but BJ, as long as he doesn't hit 150, if he hits 220, he'll still be a positive player because of everything else he does. I mean, he's already. For him to have a WAR of zero and not a negative WAR, despite a 5.10 OPS, just tells you how good he is at defense and base running and stuff. So he should be. He'll come out of it, even if he struggles. Struggling for him is still probably going to be a positive player.
Yeah, and well, the big thing really for me for the Braves' continued success in offense, despite the struggles of BJ and Dan, is really Jason Hayward and Brian McCann coming back. I think them getting back in the lineup and being healthy has been huge for the team, and they've done really well since getting back in the lineup regularly.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, McCann's been a revelation.
God, it's awesome.
I mean, he's I think his OPS is near 1,000, which is probably unsustainable, but contract year for McCann, you could probably expect that. I mean, not this level, but near this level. And Hayward, now that he's seems to be healthy, has been much better in the last week or so.
Yep. For me, with McCann coming back, the power he's shown has been really good, because the off-season shoulder surgery, that kind of it's kind of scary, especially when people worried about Brian McCann's power slipping the past years anyways. I think let's see his home run numbers. Yeah, he's always hit around 20. It's never really been any more than that. His career high is 24, so I don't think we should expect him to hit 30 home runs this year. But for him to be showing the power he's been showing so far, I think we should expect him to hit somewhere close to his career averages. I don't think that's too far fetched. What do you think about that?
Definitely not. Yeah, I mean, I mean, the contract year thing is probably overrated, especially for a guy like McCann who has never had an issue being motivated or anything like that, at least not publicly. But, yeah, he's, you know, career 476 slugging. So even if he doesn't hit a ton of home runs, he'll probably land in that 18 to 20 range, especially since he missed the beginning of the year. But
doubles,
and he still takes – I mean, he's – career 10% walk rate guy, so
yeah, his walk rate's been really good so far too, so that's good. What do you think about maybe we'll have to go into this more in depth in another podcast, but what are just your quick thoughts on the contract here for McCann? Do you think he'll stay with Atlanta? Do you think someone else is going to re-sign him? Do you think we should even bother putting the money into him. There's a lot of angles to talk about with this, but just what are your quick thoughts?
We'll probably have to get into it deep another time.
Definitely.
But I think the biggest key to what McCann's future was that Yadier Molina contract.
I was so mad when he got that.
For anybody that doesn't know, Molina got 5 years and $75 million from St. Louis.
There's no way the Braves are going to match that.
Right, and that's what it's... I mean, Molina's probably a better player than McCann right now because Molina's arguably the best defensive catcher in the league. But McCann's, several-time All-Star, several-time Silver Slugger guy. Yep. So his agent's certainly going to be pushing for that kind of money, and the Braves are not going to give him that kind of money.
Yeah, and it's really – the Braves can't give him that kind of money. They don't have enough room, even if they wanted to. If they wanted to, I still don't think they would just because of the issues with aging and giving a catcher that much money. But they just can't. So,
no, I mean, they just don't – they don't have it.
Yeah.
With everybody coming up, I mean, with Hayward and Freeman, those guys coming into extension time, and McCann being 29 and a catcher, and he's already caught over 1,000 games. He'll be really valuable for another couple of years, most likely, but the Braves are not going to be able to pony up that kind of money for him.
No, I think it's going to come down to how badly he wants to stay in Atlanta, and who knows, because you've got guys like Chipper and Tim Hudson, he'll take less money to stay here, but I mean, this is his career, so I can't blame him for taking the money.
Yeah, and this is also going to be his one huge deal. I mean,
yeah, what was the deal he took with us? It was 2005 or 2006. It was around 30, wasn't it?
Yeah, I can't remember the actuals at the moment.
Yeah,
he definitely took a discount than what he probably could have gotten.
Early in his career, the Braves offered McCann and Francoeur a very team-friendly contract for what they were putting up at the time. I think they offered Francoeur a little bit more, and Francoeur declined it. McCann took it, and it worked out pretty well for McCann. I think Francoeur kind of regrets that, but that's getting off.
I just found it. He signed 7 years, $41.3 million.
Yeah,
which
that's
is
a really good contract.
Huge steal for the Braves. I mean, bought out the arbitration, and that's a bargain, big time.
We should have been doing this kind of deal with Hayward and Freeman. Really
I would still offer Hayward that deal today, while his numbers aren't completely broken out yet. I mean, he kind of had a slow start. I would offer Hayward and Freeman that same exact deal, both of them, and see if anybody bites on it.
Yeah. All right. So let's move away from contracts because I feel like I could talk about this for a while. Do you want to talk about Evan Gattis, or do you want to move on to the Hawks?
We should probably hit on Gattis a little bit.
Yep. Right. Go for it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously 10 home runs and 133 plate appearances is kind of insane. The storyline itself has just kind of been crazy with Gattis, especially this week with at least three remembering. Yeah, pinch hit.
Gosh, he's been clutch.
Plays.
He's going to drive some sabermetric guy crazy with all the clutch talk that's going to be brought on him.
Oh, it's already happening, I'm sure.
Yeah, he's been really good. And honestly, I was a doubter. I'm going to go ahead and put my name out there. I didn't think Gattis would be this great in the major leagues. I never doubted his power. I mean, you can't really say he doesn't have the power, but I never thought he would hit consistently up here. And he doesn't have a high average, but he's been fairly consistent for us every time he's been thrown out there. And I don't know, it's really hard to argue what I did earlier this season, that he should be sent down when McCann comes back. And I think they've done pretty well with having three catchers on the bench. I don't really see that as a problem since Gattis can play left field.
I was going to say, I mean, I think it might have even been Capital Avenue, but he's pretty much made Reed Johnson expendable.
Exactly. I was going to talk about that, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, he's just, I don't know. I'm actually still kind of a doubter of Gattis, which is an unpopular opinion right now. But even with all of the crazy power and all the things, he still only has a .308 on base.
Yeah, and that's not good.
And
he's
not
a walk more.
Yeah, I mean, his pinch hitting stuff is obviously going to be the biggest part. And somebody, I don't know who made this original, the original point, but his style of hitting is huge for in a pinch hitting role, because always, because he sees a ton of fastballs, and he just mashes fastballs. So it's kind of a perfect setup for him to be the late inning like lefty pinch hitter. I mean, he's a righty, but against lefty pinch hit guy, which kind of makes Reed semi expendable.
Yeah, and especially since Reed can't play center field, we have Jordan Schaefer. He's been playing well. I don't really like Jordan Schaefer just because of all the stuff he's put the Braves through in the past, but he's done well so far. He can play center field. He can come in as a pinch runner, so he still has a role on the bench. And then Reed Johnson, he plays left and right field, and really, right, we're going to put Gattis in left and right field if one of those is going to come in at this point. So what I have been wanting the Braves, I think a lot of people have started talking about this lately, but I think it would be a good move for Wren to try and trade Reed Johnson and get a relief pitcher to help out the bullpen. What do you think they should do with Reed?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what his value is. I mean, that's kind of a but I mean, he hasn't even appeared in a game in 9 days now, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, the 17th was the last time he even appeared. Just because there's not really, I mean, he's a lefty masher, but he doesn't have big time power, so you're going to put Gattis in any big spot. And when we got Reed, it was kind of because he could play center field, but when you have Schaefer and Hayward on your roster, in addition to BJ, I mean, he's the fourth best defensive center fielder, so he's never going to play center field.
Exactly. Yeah, if any team is really going to get Reed, they're just going to need corner outfield help, and they're going to be betting on his average because, like you said, he doesn't have a lot of power. He doesn't have speed. He can't play center. So really, you're just looking for a guy maybe you can platoon with is really all that you could do.
And the thing is, I actually like Reed. I mean,
he
kills lefties. I mean, he mashes lefties, and that's definitely valuable. It's just that when you have Gattis and you're willing to play Gattis in the outfield, it makes it difficult to stick Reed in there anywhere.
Yep.
I mean, and before we leave that, Hayward played center field tonight.
Oh, he did.
I didn't mind it because I've always thought he could play it. But that, if anything, that tells you something. I mean, we started Hayward in center field. So.
Oh, okay. So BJ wasn't. Did he not play today?
Gave BJ the night off. All right. Should have mentioned that earlier tonight.
Oh, that's fine.
He finished the first game because he was obviously in there last night, but. Yeah, gave BJ the night off and didn't even put Schaefer in center, stuck Hayward in center for the first time, which was interesting.
So who do they have right and left?
Played Gattis in left and Justin in right.
Okay. Cool. Has Gattis played right field since he's been up?
No, I don't think he had. I mean, there's really no reason to put him there.
Yeah, they just move up and over to the right.
Okay. Yeah, Justin played enough right where there's no reason to stick Gattis in right unless you just
makes sense.
In a bind.
All right, so I think we should move on to the Hawks now. We've talked about the Braves for a while.
Let's do it.
So you're obviously the more knowledgeable Hawks fan here. If you guys don't know, I've never really followed the NBA, but this offseason has got me intrigued. The Hawks are, I think they have, what do they have, three people on contract right now?
Yeah, three for sure, and probably a fourth in Mike Scott. But yeah, there's only three definite contracts for next year.
So the Hawks are going to be changing over the offseason, and they have a ton of money to spend, and they're linked to guys like Chris Paul and Dwight Howard. So this is really exciting for me, and I'm just going to go ahead and jump on the Hawks bandwagon here because I never really pulled for a team.
It's time.
Ahead and tell us about the Hawks and what do you think they should do for their head coaching choice, and also maybe touch on Chris Paul and Dwight Howard and whoever else you like in free agency.
Yeah, the head coaching search is kind of the big thing right now because free agency doesn't hit till July 1st. And it's really one of the weirder situations in the entire league because Larry Drew, the current Hawks head coach, is still under contract. Apparently, they have a standing agreement between Drew and the GM, Danny Ferry, where Drew can interview for other jobs and Ferry is interviewing people for the current job, but Drew's still employed and they haven't cut ties with him.
So it's pretty much an understood that he's gone. It's just he's not gone yet.
Well, yeah, and they haven't even officially said. I mean, the two of them left the door kind of cracked open that they could bring Drew back, but I can't imagine it after this many interviews, and Drew's been interviewing in Milwaukee and other places. So it looks like we're going to have a new coach for the first time in a while. And there's kind of a mixed message on who we're actually going to go after. ESPN's Chris Broussard believes that, I guess the quote was that many in the league believe that the Spurs assistant Mike Budenholzer will be Danny Ferry's choice. But obviously the Hawks can't hire him if the Spurs are still in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Well, I guess they could hire him, but it would probably not happen until the Spurs lose. But between him, the Hawks were linked to Stan Van Gundy, the former Orlando coach, but
yep.
he's apparently said he's gonna not coach the season to be more with his family. Which
so he's not gonna coach next season at all for anyone.
He said that in an interview. I mean,
okay.
It's kind of I don't know. He hasn't. He's still interviewed for the Hawks job, so there's some interest there. It seems.
Yeah, and I was gonna ask you with the Hawks being interested in Dwight Howard. What do you think the odds are that they would actually hire Stan Van Gundy? Because I know there's a lot of drama with Howard and then the Orlando Magic. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting that the Hawks even interview Van Gundy. Well, before I start that, for the record, I think Van Gundy is the best available coaching candidate. He did a fantastic job in Orlando, but basically got fired because he couldn't get along with Dwight Howard. And the Hawks are on record as saying they're going after Dwight Howard, so it seems to be an interesting mix there.
Seems counterproductive to me, but
yeah, I can't imagine a scenario where we would get both of them. I mean, Van Gundy's kind of pulls his name out anyway, but it was kind of a weird mix anyway when we were trying to pursue both guys, and that didn't make sense to me. But yeah.
Let's see. With what do you think about Dwight Howard? Because I know you're big on Al Horford. You think he can play center, but you also said that Dwight and Al Horford would be a good combination. Personally, I don't like Dwight Howard. It's not anything to do with his play. I know he's probably the best center in the league, defensive center in the league, but I just think he's a drama queen. He's really annoying. He whines about everything. He's coming off the back injury, which I don't think that's a huge problem now because he did well at the end of the year. But I just think it the cost you get for having Dwight Howard, all the off the court stuff, is too much for what you're paying him and what he gives you. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Dwight is not the player that he was before. I mean, I wrote a long piece on the site about Dwight, but I think for the Hawks, it makes some sense just because there's two clear top free agents this year, and Chris Paul and Dwight Howard, and this is kind of the year for the Hawks to make their free agent splash because they have $30 million plus in cap space. And I think Dwight and Al Horford would be good together. I mean, I definitely think Al Horford can play center and has played center effectively, but when you have a guy like Dwight who's from here, which I know everybody's tired of hearing about, he's from here. I'm tired of hearing about it too, but it does matter, I guess, a little bit. And Dwight's so much better than everybody else that's available at that position to where it could be a good fit. I mean, his off-the-court stuff is annoying. I mean, if he's not the old Dwight Howard from Orlando, then it might not be worth the trouble.
Yep.
But if he's still, even this year, even injured and hobbled, was probably a top, 20, 25 player in the league. And if you can get that kind of guy, you kind of have to try to go after him.
All right. What do you think the odds are Chris Paul comes to Atlanta? I know right now they still think that the Clippers are the favorites
yeah,
to land him. What do you think about that? I would love for Chris Paul to come to Atlanta because, like I said, I'm jumping on the bandwagon. I think he's one of the most exciting players to watch in the league, behind LeBron, of course. But how likely do you think it is that Chris Paul comes to Atlanta?
It's probably not that likely. I mean, when when he was coming out of the draft, he actually was vocal about wanting to be in Atlanta. He's from, I think, Winston-Salem.
Yep. He went to Wake Forest.
Yeah, he went to Wake for sure, but I think he's from that area too and wanted to, like, even said it coming out of college, wanted to play for Atlanta. And, of course, the Hawks famously passed on him to draft Marvin Williams.
Hindsight.
We could do that at another time too, because that's a long list. But the big issue for the Chris Paul pursuit is that the Clippers can offer him more money than anybody else. They have his bird rights, so they can give him the fifth year, which for a guy like Paul, I think he was 27 or 28, could be a big thing. He's got kind of a bulky knee. I mean, I'm not worried about his knee, but he might want to lock that fifth year in. And it's L.A., it's a big market, and they were a better team than the Hawks were this year. But he is from the Southeast, which could be good, and he'd be my top target ahead of Dwight Howard. I would be sitting in Chris Paul's driveway on July 1st. I mean, he's the best point guard in the league. If you put him and Al Horford together, you're immediately a home court advantage team in the East, unless the rest of the team is a disaster. I mean, you're a top four team in the East, in my opinion, if you put Chris Paul and Dwight Howard, and Al Horford together.
Gotcha. So. All right, cool. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on this one? Or?
Yeah, just one more, because I don't know when the Hawks are going to make their hire, but I mean, yep. There's a few guys the Hawks have been linked to. I mean, I mentioned Budenholzer, the Spurs assistant, but there's also heard Brian Shaw, who's been a Lakers assistant for a long time. There's guys like Nate McMillan, who was the coach of the Blazers, I guess, 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I guess Drew could come back. So I mean, there's some names out there. I have no issue at all with Budenholzer. I mean, I admittedly don't know a lot about the guy, but hiring from the Spurs organization is never a bad idea.
I mean, I was gonna say, especially coming from me as someone who doesn't really know a whole lot about the NBA, it seems like he would be an early favorite just because of the Danny Ferry Budenholzer connection with the Spurs.
Yeah, I mean, you got Danny Ferry connection. You got the Spurs just being the factory of the best. They have definitely the best NBA model of.
It's like the Cardinals of the NBA.
Yeah, it's taking a guy from there is probably not a bad idea. The only concern would be you worry about a first time guy. How far can a first time guy take you? But so I'd be good with that. That or Nate McMillan would be just fine. And the Hawks are also linked to a guy named. I don't know. I think it's Ettore. I don't know how to say his first name. Ettore Messina, who's a famous EuroLeague head coach.
Wow.
Which would be really an interesting hire. It'd be the first time that someone from the NBA was hired someone straight from the EuroLeague to be the head coach.
So gotcha. That's interesting.
Got to bring some focus. But that's probably the first domino that'll fall with the Hawks. So that's something to keep an eye on.
All right. Cool. All right, guys. I think that about wraps it up for this podcast. It's 1:50 Eastern time. Me and Brad decided to have a little late night chat. And also, if you didn't know, the UNC State game is in the bottom of the 18th inning right now, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Still going. Wow. At least Carolina scored in the top half.
Yeah, if you guys didn't know, I go to UNC, so I'm pulling for them to win, obviously. Oh, we scored. Wow. Brad, yeah. I didn't even know we scored.
Oh, sorry.
This is a big deal. Okay, I'm really excited now. I just saw a state runner on third, and I was freaking out. But anyways, back to Atlanta stuff. The site, if you guys didn't know, just went over a design overhaul, and it looks really good. We've added some new writers, so... exciting things are coming for the ATL All Day website. We've put up a bunch of really good coverage lately. So just stick around, and hopefully we can get this podcast rolling on a regular basis. I know Nick is probably going to join us here soon, so things are looking good. Any last thoughts or statements, Brad?
Just keep checking the site. A lot of stuff going on fresh. Hawks are in the, quote, off season, but that's picking up, and we just actually brought in a new Falcons writer. So
Dustin's had some really good pieces, especially the one on, if you haven't seen it, Dustin had a really good piece on the Falcons defense and kind of the future of NFL defenses, which was really a nice read. So go check that out.
Keep checking on the site. Go like the Facebook page if you haven't already.
Yep.
Follow the Twitter account.
Yep. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Podcast themes.com. Go check it out.